What would you do if you had heard that the tomb was empty, your friends had seen Jesus, and that by all accounts the things he had said had come true? Would you act like the disciples? Would you hide in the upper room? The question that always jumps out at me with this passage we had this morning, we'll get to Thomas in a minute. Why aren't the disciples out looking for Jesus? If he's alive, and if Mary and Johanna have seen him, why aren't they out looking? Did the disciples believe Mary or not? Was Peter amazed by what he discovered in the empty tomb when he picked up the grave clothes? Did they remember back to the words that Jesus spoke about his life and his death and what was going to happen? Why didn't they go looking for Jesus? The passage this morning, it deals with Thomas, poor doubting Thomas. It's a passage that asks us to confront whether we are willing to trust on faith that Christ is indeed alive, that he has overcome the grave. This is the, if I don't see it, I won't believe it passage. And still I ask, why didn't the disciples go looking for Jesus? Well, perhaps the answer is because Jesus comes looking for us. Jesus comes looking for us during those difficult moments when we'd rather he didn't show up. He finds his way into the closed-off parts of our hearts and minds. And for some reason, we are afraid of his presence, afraid that he might judge us, find us unworthy of being loved, chastise us for a sin we'd rather not admit. And so we close ourselves off from him, or we try to. We build up walls. We roll a stone in front of the entrance, like the tomb. But these are the places that Jesus comes looking for us. And when he arrives, all he says is, "Peace be with you." Like the disciples, we are called to move from a place of fear to a place of life. At its heart, this is a passage about life. Life which is full, and life which is valued. A life which is cherished. And we are called to move from merely existing to live in the abundance and the eternity of God. The disciples are called to move from a life which is rooted in fear to a life which is full of God's abundance. And it is in abundant life that we would find those disciples in that passage from Acts, declaring that they must follow God, that they must teach and talk about Jesus. And they repeat the refrain, "Peace be with you." But what of Thomas? You all want to know about Thomas. Was he right to doubt? And what exactly is he doubting? Is he doubting whether Jesus was raised from the dead? Well, hadn't all the disciples doubted the words of Mary, calling them nonsense? I'm not sure that Thomas is doubting the resurrection as much as he is doubting what his friends are telling him. It makes me wonder if all the practical jokes that the disciples might have participated in all had Thomas as the target of the joke. And there he is, just wondering if this is just another joke that the disciples are pulling on him. Has being cooped up in the upper room for a week gotten the best of the disciples? But perhaps a better question to ask is whether the title of Doubting Thomas is fair or even accurate. We think that Thomas doubts. Jesus says, "Why do you doubt?" But let's be honest. If you had any doubts about who Jesus was after he was crucified, you'd have left. You'd have jumped ship and you'd have caught the first train out of town. You wouldn't have hung around. Thomas doesn't do that. Just like all the other disciples, Thomas stays. In fact, he's the one who was out and not in the upper room. He was the one showing his face about town. Thomas doesn't doubt who Jesus is, but he wants what everyone else got. Caroline Lewis puts it like this: all Thomas wants, all Thomas needs, is what everyone else had, and if we're honest, what we want: to see Jesus one more time. Mary saw the Lord. The disciples saw the Lord, because the Word made flesh isn't, if you can't see and feel Jesus one last time. Thomas doesn't doubt. He simply wants affirmation in what he believes. It is Thomas that has the most heartfelt confession in this passage from John. This week I encountered the following quote about this passage. It's a religious site I follow that is very tongue-in-cheek. And the quote is actually from a lyrics from a song called Wonderwall. Jesus said to Thomas, "I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt." And putting his hand in Jesus' side, Thomas said to him, "Maybe you're going to be the one that saves me." The words that Thomas speaks, "My Lord and my God," highlight what the author of the gospel follows up with. These words are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. Our assumption about resurrection is that it is a one-time event. That it's over, it's happened, it's done, finished. That we simply need to trust, believe, or have faith that it actually occurred. What we fail to see is that resurrection happens all around us. Christ's dying and rising is synonymous with our own lives. How often have we felt that something in our own lives was lost to us or dead? We stare into the void and we wonder, how do we recover? How do we move forward? Then resurrection occurs. And our eyes clear. And we realize that all we needed to do was trust. That we can move forward in faith. Thomas helps us understand that the Word did indeed become flesh. That resurrection matters because of the encounter we have with God. Thomas reminds us of the importance of this moment and the next one, and about the intentionality of our actions as we live in the abundance of God's love, finding life with God. Because remember, no matter your circumstances, Jesus will always come looking for you. Peace be with you.